Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Connecticut filmmaker Alessandro Andreulli. He's doing this great project called Open Letter. He says it's like a music video, a visual poem with dancing and cinematography. I absolutely love this because he's taking a trauma he experienced as a child and turning it into art, which is the ultimate victory. We talk about the inspiration for creating such a personal film. He talks about his process for creating this, his collaborators, which include a dance troupe, and the fundraising process. Enjoy! I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is a brand that represents a community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, courses, and coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for a 50% off discount on all of their products. That's B-R-O-O-K-E.
Hey, Alessandro.
How you doing?
Good. About you?
Good, good. Should I put the earbuds on to get better audio, or does this sound pretty good to you?
I think it sounds pretty good.
Okay, great. So, all right.
So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm running. I got you, and then I got one more interview. I'm going to be doing Hartford Public Access right after when I'm done talking to you today.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so, yeah.
All kinds of running around.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, so I read about your open letter. And first of all, I love the whole concept of taking art, taking trauma, and like kind of repackaging it as victory almost. Through art, empowerment. I so dig that, and that's why I like, oh, this is so cool. Okay, so tell me, you're a cinematographer or a filmmaker.
Yes. Yes.
This is a film, but it's got like all kinds of stuff in it. It's got dancing, it's got poetry. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's more like a music video. It's like 3.5 minutes.
Okay.
It's a visual. So it's a visual poem. So it's my poem Open Letter that I wrote as a almost like a victim statement. Mm-hmm. Like you would if you were going to trial for somebody that harmed you, and then being able to speak to them directly. And because the person that harmed me when I was a child passed away in 1998, and I didn't even realize I was abused until 2007 when it was on the news, I had buried the actual trauma. So I wrote this poem as a way to try for my brain to try to understand this and to have an outlet for me to take that emotion. And now that I'm working with a specialist for my trauma, as an adult, I just started working with her about a year and a half ago. I actually understand that I was really doing something special with this without help, without any guidance, which was to allow my emotion of anger about the situation to have a safe space to exist.
Okay.
And so that's really what the poem did. And the project is me now applying that with my cinematography and working with dancers. I have this hip hop studio out of Bloomfield called Studio 860. They work with like Alvin Alley and high schools and everybody in between. Amazing organization, amazing dance studio. And so they're going to be telling the story through hip hop, like the way you would through ballet, telling the story visually. Mm-hmm. And we set it to music in my poem, and it's going to be something really special.
Cool. Cool. So, okay. So 10 years ago, you said that you just found out that you were abused, and then you wrote this poem, mm-hmm. Open Letter. And so how was this? I mean, obviously it changed your life when it happened, when you found out, but was it affecting you before? Like, did you notice things beforehand that you can say, oh, that's why?
Yeah, it happened when I was 9, between the ages of 9 and 13. And it was done by a doctor who had abused me and hundreds of other young people when they were young. He's been doing it since the 70s under this idea, this guise of doing this growth study for kids taking Ritalin pre-puberty to see if it would stunt their growth. And so it was it changed me pretty much immediately. You know, if you watch some of the videos, you can see the 8 minute long kind of explanation video. It shows that, you know, you can see in the photographs, much like the, was it the Mia Farrow versus Woody Allen documentary with their daughter? If you watch that documentary, she shows photographs as well that you can see her before the abuse, see photographs of her before the abuse and after the abuse, and how the light just kind of left her eyes. The sense of self-worth that you lose when an adult uses you as a physical object and not a person, really changes you. And going, especially for pre-puberty, going into puberty, it really changed my brain chemistry drastically. So I was struggling for years, didn't understand what was going on. My parents didn't understand what was going on. They were right in the next room when it happened. They were there in the waiting room the whole time, every single time they took me there, and they didn't know, and I didn't know. So we all got victimized as a family at that point. So we went through my entire life, pretty much over 30 years of just not knowing why I was different, what was going on with me emotionally, mentally. And, you know, I was functioning overall. I had relationships, I had jobs, I did things, but I struggled to really reach my full potential because of this constant duality of being wanting to get things done, but also being everything's scary. It creates a fear in me, having this perpetual fight or flight activation inside of me that would never quiet.
When
I was, you know, early 30s, it became on the news because in 2007, somebody had bought his property after he passed away in 1998. In 2007, somebody bought one of his properties and they were doing renovations, and they found, while they were, you know, opening up the walls to just change the paneling, they found, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of images of inappropriate images of children. And so it was on the news. My parents spoke to me about it, and I was in denial. I didn't want to believe it.
Right.
But then I went and I met the law firm. There was a law firm that was representing me and all the other victims. And that was the one that put the news piece out in order to reach out and to let people know so they could reach out to them. And speaking to the lawyer, I would pull that, you know, information out of my head. I would pull those memories out of my head. It felt like I was having like an out of body experience, just having to recite that information of what the doctor visit was, because it didn't fit the normal category of what sexual abuse would be, because it was done under the guise of a medical exam that just went on way too long, really awkward,
and
very strange.
The pubescent stuff. Thought it was normal.
Yeah, you don't really know. And your parents are telling your mom, father are telling you, go to this place. We have to figure this out and see if this is going to affect your growth.
Right.
And I kept saying, I want to go, but I didn't have the words. I didn't understand exactly what was happening. So they didn't, I didn't. And it just continued for years until they finally stopped that. But when I was 30 and I finally got a chance to speak about it and bring it out, then I realized that was what had caused this mental shift in me, this emotional shift in me. And even for years after that, I still didn't understand exactly what this had done and what this was until about, I want to say 2 years ago, I was watching the M. Night Shyamalan movie Split.
Uh-huh.
And I had been telling my therapist for years, like, you know, all these different symptoms I've been having, and none of them picked up on it because most therapists are not trained as specialists for everything. Okay. They don't understand exactly what something else is. They have a general approach. Mm-hmm. So when I watched the movie Split, and there was a young woman in the film that her uncle had molested her, and she had these symptoms from that. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to what they were saying, and what they were calling it as dissociative identity disorder. And a light bulb went off, and I said, I want to look this up. When I finished watching the film, I looked it up. I started finding books on it. I found this book by Janine Fisher called Healing the Fractured Selves. Mm-hmm. And then I was reading that, and I read up the actual name of the therapy, sensory motor psychotherapy. It's like a talk-based therapy. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely effective with people. And it was actually having an impact. So I found a specialist, been working with her for a year and a half now. And the beauty of it is it's actually doing repair. It's not just understanding, it's repair.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. So you combined like poetry and dance in this movie or this documentary.
Yes.
So like, why did you think it was important to use dance and or poetry for, I mean, why not other art forms?
Sure. Well, I was looking to do something a little more dynamic. I've been getting into different kinds of motion systems with my camera to find different ways to move it to create different emotional effect. And I was watching a lot of these cinematographers doing these dance pieces where they'd find a big kind of warehousey space and they'd shoot light through the windows and add some haze for atmosphere and have these ballet dancers dancing in the space. And I said, that's beautiful. I'd love to do something like that because it's the human form, it's human expression. It's nonverbal at that point. It's just trying to communicate through body language and then using the movement and momentum of the camera to enhance that and add to it, like the camera becomes almost like a puppet that I'm manipulating to create energy. So I really fell in love with that idea of doing something with dance. And then I was kind of figuring out, originally it was going to be almost like a visual montage of imagery, and I had all of these different camera riggings that I was going to do to try different kinds of motion system stuff in it to create some dynamism. And then I went to a documentary screening, this Dysphoria Stories screening over at Studio 860 that my friend Jocelyn Pleasant was doing about the jazz and Latin scene in Hartford and people coming from Africa and then bringing that music to Hartford. And that was at Studio 860, and I really enjoyed the space. I looked them up and I found information about the teachers. I had spoken to the two owners, Jolette and Pete. I really loved their vibe. I felt like they really understood poetry and things that are a little more non, you know, linear thought, you know, way of communicating. Mm-hmm. And so I approached them, I called them and they said, hey, I'd love to pitch the project to you. We sat down, we had a discussion, and immediately I understood that they got it.
Yeah.
You know, they work with kids that have gone through major traumas and put that into their dance.
Wow.
Not every student has, but like they know a lot of kids that have gone through that. They're in the Harvard school system. They know a lot of kids gone through a lot of heavy things, broken homes and, you know, all those kind of things and everything in between and abuse. So, and loss. And a lot of those kids will use that dance as a form of therapy in a way because it gives them something to focus on and to channel that memory, that emotion into it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was just a great fit. I thought it just really would be an amazing fit since they're they do every dance style, but since they mostly do hip hop, I thought it would feel more fluid to stick with their style that they do the most.
Right.
Actually,
right.
A bunch of their dancers were just in the hip hop version of the Tempest in Hartford.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they have some really amazing dancers they work with, and the choreographer Jolette is amazing. And so is Pete, but yeah, they just felt like it was a good fit, you know, really felt like a good fit. They're amazing human beings. They get it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so amazing. It's so great to find someone you vibe with. That's really cool.
Absolutely. I'm actually talking about this project at Hartford Art Space on Saturdays. On Saturday, there's a whole art show called Behind the Mask, which is finding healing or putting your trauma into your art. So every artist there is taking their trauma and putting it into their art.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really amazing to be speaking with those people and watching their artists talk as well and learning more about their process and their journey.
Right, right. That's fabulous. And also, did I see that I guess that's what it was. So you're in the Finding Art Through Trauma exhibition.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you, were you in that or were you?
I'm in it. So basically I'm just playing some of the videos that I had for the promotional videos and some information there. And then on Saturday, there's the artist talks portion of the, because it's a 3-week show, gallery show. So I'm going to be talking about the project, talking about my journey, and then reciting some poetry as well.
Cool. Okay. So, and you're doing fundraising as well. That's also another reason I'm interested in this, because I want to learn how the whole fundraising thing goes.
Sure. Yeah.
So are you coordinating the performance now, even though you don't have all the funding yet?
The video is not going to be filmed until we have some sort of funding. We did record the audio already. We did do the mixing already. So that's already done. I'm paying for that out of pocket right now. But until we get the funding, we're not going to do it yet. But, you know, no matter what, it's happening. We're going to figure a way to make it happen. You know, we're not really hitting our mark yet for time-wise as far as the funding, but I might end up on NPR. I have a bunch of podcasts lined up.
Cool.
I have a bunch of interviews lined up. So I'm hoping we can get a bigger push and, you know, just try to get that. I'm doing this every single day. Like every single day I'm on social. I'm contacting people directly. I'm individually messaging every person I know.
Right.
Every single avenue. I was on Fox 61 talking about it. And so I'm like on every place I can be, pulling out a lot of favors, because I used to do a lot of networking and trying to be a proponent for job growth for film and television for years. Mm-hmm. Did a networking event called the Film Industry Mixer. We worked with governors and mayors and had everybody from above the line to below the line in film showing up at that event to promote themselves and do panels and live recitations of scenes and stuff like that and live music. And we did it as a big celebration of everything film and television to showcase the resources we had here. We did that for a number of years. So I'm really a big proponent of the arts and of film in New England.
Yeah. 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 That's awesome. What's the art scene like there in Connecticut?
It's the art scene's pretty cool. The film and television scene is kind of light. We have a little bit of television. I think we had like Judge Judy and stuff like that here, mostly kind of reality stuff, judge shows. We had Deal or No Deal for a little bit, and then that got taken away because the two unions from New York are fighting on who was going to get the contract, so that kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
But I did my Fox 61 interview, I said that, you know, the film and television industry, you have to be kind of an independent contractor and going and working with different companies and traveling. I've been to Fresno, I've been all over the place doing projects wherever the job is. So the art scene is cool. You know, definitely New London is a very strong art scene, and I work in the Mystic New London area. So there's a lot of fantastic giant murals over there. It's a kind of a beautiful, there's the Hygienic in New London as well. It's amazing little outdoor theater.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
There's just some amazing stuff here and amazing human beings. Like I'm actually helping to film a documentary right now for Fireside Films for the city of New London, for this infinity statue they're planning on building over on one of the rock islands in Ocean Beach Park. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a female figure holding an infinity symbol that illuminates. And it's like a symbol of kind of togetherness and coming back together.
Oh, so, neat. That sounds really cool. So, okay. So like, how do you, you say the film industry or the TV industry is not as strong there in Hartford. How do you create an urgency or an importance to people who might not feel that?
I feel like all you can do is kind of put your art out there. You know, you can't, I tried for years to build an infrastructure for film and television here, help to support the growth and building of infrastructure here, of having rental houses and things that we would need if you were to have productions be here. So they wouldn't have to travel to New York for the rental houses and then come and do the work here, which just creates more expenses. So we don't really have the infrastructure for film and television per se. We have small studio space for the judge shows, for reality TV, things that are less expensive. Mm-hmm. Those I think are probably going to end up popping up more in New England. Mm-hmm. There are some potential studios coming in. I'm not sure the longevity of it, but I know the actor Michael Jai White started Gigantic Studios here in Connecticut. And so we'll see how that fares and what else pops up. But I've learned that, you know, as an artist, all you can really do is create things that you're passionate about and then find where you're going to find those people that resonate with it. So I eventually am moving to Georgia to do television work out there, because I don't have to build it. It's already there. I can just go and work and be around creatives. Mm-hmm. And after over 10 years of trying to build the industry here or help to support its growth, mm-hmm. To see it constantly ebb and flow is definitely disconcerting, but it doesn't mean there's nothing here. There are small companies like Synthetic Cinema International that does things for a Hallmark Channel and for Lifetime and Sci-Fi and Chiller Channel. They do, you know, low budget films for those networks, and they're based out of Connecticut. And then my friend's company, Goodnight Film, also makes stuff for Showtime International. We have Blue Sky Studios that does the Ice Age movies. That's in Connecticut. So there's things here where there's not a lot of jobs for people that are doing the work here.
Right, right. So yeah, so it's that's a problem. So how do you, is there a way you can create a job for yourself? Like kind of.
I'm getting into documentary work. So yes.
Okay.
Documentary work doesn't really require you to live any particular place.
Right.
You just find a broadcaster that's interested in your pitch, and you make it for them. They fund it at that point.
Okay.
You're not going to usually making anything above your rate, but you're getting paid for the entire time you're making it.
Oh, that.
So that's definitely something that is possible here in New England.
Cool. Cool. I love that. I love that. And you were talking about Studio 860, the dance studio. And who's Jane Doe No More?
Jane Doe No More is an organization in Connecticut that helps people that have gone through domestic violence and trauma. They're basically support service. The creator of the organization was a victim herself, as a survivor herself of trauma. And so her organization has actually even extended the statute of limitation for victims. They've changed laws. They've made major impacts, but they also go and do things like go to high schools and junior highs and teach kids what consent is, what a healthy relationship is to prevent abuse from happening again. They have survivor talks where people go and talk about their stories and share their stories. And I think that's kind of what I'm doing here with this as well, is to share my story to inspire other people to say, here, if you take art, even if it's not something you're going to display, if it's something you're just doing for yourself,
right,
to take your trauma and channel it into something creative, it allows you to communicate in a way that linear conversation is not necessarily going to be as effective as. And especially when you're trying to communicate to loved ones around you of what you're going through, and you really don't have the words, poetry, dance, art can be a great conduit for that, to start conversations and create understanding.
Yeah. So have you met other people who have gone through what you've gone through?
Yes. I mean, I think that when you've gone through some sort of sexual assault, you inadvertently are connected and attracted to other people that have gone through that. It just energy wise, you don't even realize you're doing it. And I have a lot of friends who have gone through similar things that I've gone through, and did not mean to, you know, become friends with, but you just feel like this kinship, you don't realize where it's coming from.
Right.
And so, yeah, I do. And also through this Behind the Masks series, I've made friends with people that have gone through traumas themselves and are using art as a way to express that. So it's actually a very beautiful thing to have people feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable around you and share their stories. Like when I used to do slam poetry events, I found that so inspirational that people would tell these personal stories through their poetry in front of a room of strangers, and then get all this love and adulation from the whole crowd afterwards. It was extraordinarily powerful.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. So where can people find you to donate or to just find out what you're up to?
So if they want to find the project to donate, and we're going to be crowdfunding for another, we have about like 20 something days left before the crowdfunding expires, when you have to be able to reach at least 80% of our funding goal in order to get the money. Okay. So they can go to seedandspark.com. Okay. And look up Open Letter.
Okay.
Or they can go to Instagram or Facebook and look up Open Letter Project Official, and they can find it there. I'm sure you'll put that in the show notes. Also, I can send that to you.
Certainly.
People can find it more directly. But yeah, it's the Open Letter Project. And so, yeah, the project's called Open Letter. It's based on the poem. It's something that they said is really... it's a moment in my life where I get to take control of my narrative.
Yes.
Where I get to find my voice, find confidence in myself, start to love myself, and to find real healing. And why I wanted to create this project is also, when you do these things in a vacuum, and I've done projects in a vacuum that I funded myself, you don't really get any real genuine support. You get people that want to be a part of the project, and they watch the project, and then they don't share the project.
Yeah.
Because people are getting something for free, they don't really see any value, and you're not really creating any real community. But crowdfunding gives you an opportunity to create a community around the project, to support the project, and help us get through the process of making something as emotional as this. And by having that community support, saying they care enough to give money to help us make this, they care enough to follow us and share and get in the conversation, And so I created the Facebook group for this project to be an extension of it, to live at long after it, where people that have gone through trauma or have mental health conditions can go and join the Facebook group, have conversations, share resources, and to continue that process of healing. So if people go to Open Letter Project Official on Facebook, they can find it there, and there's links to the campaign. Okay. And it's going to be a really great thing. I'm going to be encouraging that on Saturday at the event. So a lot of those artists will end up on that group.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, this is so great. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
So awesome. And I want to have you on again, talking about your other films.
Yeah. And I have a whole plethora of stories of being on sets and working on projects. I mean, I worked on a film called Diamond Rough that we shot in Hartford. We had the mayor involved. We had Hartford police and Hartford police cars and Hartford police uniforms. And we did a car chase sequence. And, you know, it's a bank robbery sequence with a 15-foot tall Trojan horse with the bank robbers coming out of it. We've done some really cool stuff.
Cool.
As filmmakers in New England. And I got to be a part of some of those really cool stories. So I definitely like to come back and just talk about some fun stuff.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have you back. Awesome. Well, have a great day. It's good to talk to you, Alessandro. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Brooke. This is wonderful. I really enjoyed the conversation. You have a wonderful show, and I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'll send you a link when this posts, and if you could.
Thank you so much to Alessandro and Julie for taking the time out of his busy day to chat with me about this courageous and stellar project. He's still in the fundraising process, so if you want to get involved, there will be links on the page. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, presented by Corey Knox.